and welcome to this week's Liverpool Lives podcast. I'm Eleanor Finn, and I'll be discussing the main news stories in Liverpool, plus a roundup of the latest sports headlines and what's going on in the city this week. Coming up on this week's show, we'll hear from the director of a new campaign launched on Merseyside to raise awareness about the health issues surrounding fizzy drinks.
We do have worse health statistics in the North West than Liverpool and Manchester, particularly, always seem to end up sort of near the top of the tables you don't want to be at. So whether we're talking about tooth decay and obesity.
Plus, we'll hear from this man about how he feels over the project to preserve St Luke's bombed out church.
It's kind of when you've been waiting for a bus for a long time at the bus stop, and then eventually three buses come at once. It's that kind of feeling. It's like, thank goodness. It's more than excitement, it's relief. Finally, something's being done. So, I mean, like I say, since 2007, we've been fixing what we're allowed to, but we're not allowed to do the big stuff. We couldn't afford to do the big stuff. So it's like the bus has finally arrived.
But first, Merseyside police appeared in court on Wednesday the 18th of February in a bid to issue Garland's nightclub with a three-month closure order. The judge granted the closure after Garland's nightclub was raided on Thursday the 12th of February and large quantities of what appeared to be controlled drugs were discovered at the venue. Lomax became the second venue to be raided by police in Liverpool, and our reporter Bethan Tolley has more on this story.
Over 1,300 people are set to protest at the Lomax this Saturday. The Lomax, which is on Cumberland Street in the city centre, became the second venue to be raided by police last week when it was targeted in the early hours of Saturday morning. A Facebook page titled Save the Lomax has been created, with over 7,000 people invited to the event at the venue on Saturday lunchtime. Police will appear in Liverpool and Knowsley Magistrates Court for a full hearing to close the club on Wednesday the 25th of February. I spoke to Anna Henney, who set up the event on Facebook. She is eager for people attending to know that it will be a peaceful protest and an opportunity for people who love the club to come together and show support.
The Lomax has got a huge family, and everyone really felt the need to do something. So I just tried to get the ball rolling, really. It's not actually a protest, it's more just a gathering of people to show support, really.
So how successful are you hoping it will be on Saturday?
Well, as I said, it's not really a protest, more just a show of support and appreciation for Lomax and what the community is. So we're just really hoping that it's going to be a big turnout and a really warm and friendly environment for everyone involved. Ideally, we'd like the Lomax, the place that we've come to love as our second home, to just become open again for the city. There's nowhere else quite like the Lomax in the city to give the opportunity for local bands and performers to play on the same bill as national and international touring acts. Many local bands played their first ever shows there, and the Lomax staff have got a history of offering many levels of support to local musicians. As I said, it's more like a community and a family rather than just any old venue or bar.
Like, are you like quite overwhelmed by the amount of people who have actually got involved with it and who are wanting to go on Saturday?
But, I mean, we knew that we had a huge love, the community of Lomax, but people can bring banners and stuff, but we're not going to be marching through Liverpool. It's just going to be a static event outside the venue. And we also really want to encourage people to bring testimonials of what the Lomax means to them, hopefully printed out. If not, they can just be there to talk about them as well.
Ryan Lee, a member of Liverpool band Scarlet, is going to the protest on Saturday and is hoping people will understand how important the venue is to the city.
I think it's really important that everyone involved in not just the music scene, but anyone who really cares about anything creatively in Liverpool should really get involved. Kind of place where you can go and sort of like perfect your craft playing live, because it's really important for those like the really grassroots level of music. That, you know, they get a chance to perform, just even if it's in front of two men and a dog, you know, it really helps. They're going to be targeting places with drugs, and they should definitely be hitting Concert Square, like, or, you know, places on Matthew Street, which is literally just around the corner from the Lomax. I've never even known there were a problem with drugs there, to be honest. But you know it goes on everywhere, even if you don't hear about it, you know it happens.
After closing the club last week, officers carried out an extensive search of the four-storey premises and found cannabis and some cocaine.
That was Bethan Tolley speaking to Anna Henney and Ryan Lee over the recent closure of Lomax Nightclub. New figures show that the rate of gun crime in Merseyside is the third highest in the country behind London and Birmingham. Figures obtained show that the region's gun crime rate stands at 15.3 incidents per 100,000 people. Merseyside witnessed 212 gun crime incidents in 2013 to 2014. This is just one more than the previous year. Figures, however, do suggest a downward trend is occurring due to the work by Merseyside Police and their Matrix unit, a special drug and gun force. The top five regions for gun crime were the West Midlands, London, Merseyside, Greater Manchester and South Yorkshire. Our reporter Jake Cottrell joins me in the studio now. How serious of an issue is gun crime in Merseyside?
The timing of the release of the figures, just after the shooting of 17-year-old Kevin Wilson recently, will be damaging for Liverpool's reputation, and gun crime is clearly still a serious issue. However, despite having the third highest rate of gun crime in the country, Merseyside has actually become much safer when it comes to gun-related crimes over the last 7 years. In 2007-2008, gun crime in the area was running at an average of more than one incident per day, but since then it has declined a huge amount.
Is the rate of gun crime falling overall in England?
Yes, the number of offences involving firearms has been falling year on year since its peak in 2003-2004, when 24,000 offences were recorded. The latest figure of 7,700 offences represents a fall of 68% since then.
If anyone has any information regarding gun crime, who is best to contact?
Any information should be reported to either the police, or they can do it anonymously to Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111.
That was our reporter Jake Cottrell talking about the issues of gun crime in Liverpool. The dangers of drinking too many fizzy drinks have been highlighted in a new health campaign. The Give Up Loving Pop campaign was launched on Merseyside on February the 16th to raise awareness of the health issues surrounding drinking too many sugary drinks. Give Up Loving Pop was created by Food Active following research that revealed the lack of awareness amongst both adults and young people regarding the link between sugary drinks and obesity. Gulp appeared in Liverpool Central Railway Station on Wednesday the 18th of February for a 2-hour time slot, and this was encouraged parents and young people to think twice about what they're drinking. Ruby Molyneux has more on this story.
The Gulp campaign has been launched to raise awareness of the high amount of sugar in fizzy drinks and fruit juices, which has been linked to the rise of obesity in the UK. A new report says that one can of fizzy drink a day can lead to a person's increase in heart disease, tooth decay and diabetes. Doctors are urging drastic cuts to the amount people are consuming, describing their use as a serious and growing concern to the public's health. Robin Ireland, Chief Executive of Health Equalities Group and Director of the Gulp campaign, told us about the impact fizzy drinks have on the health of the public. What do you hope the campaign will do for Merseyside?
I hope we'll raise awareness of the problems that you can have with sugary drinks. Give Up Loving Pop is all about raising awareness both of the impact that sugary drinks can have on your teeth, but also, unfortunately, it's linked with putting on weight and long-term concerns around diabetes and coronary heart disease. So more awareness of those issues.
Do you think people don't realise that sugary drinks can lead to weight gain?
We did some research, actually, with Liverpool John Moores last year, where we found that people understood the link with teeth and teeth decay, but didn't really make that link with obesity, which I would have thought more people were aware of. And maybe people don't want to confront that, but if you're drinking two or three bottles of sugary drinks a day, there's empty calories, essentially. It's very easy to put on weight as a result of it.
Do you think adults need to be taught if they're giving their children sugary drinks?
Yeah, I think adults need to be a bit more aware. But also, of course, let's be honest, the amount of money that the sugary drinks companies put out to advertise and market their products, particularly aimed at children and young people, is very worrying. And I think we need more controls over that in terms of junk food marketing, to be quite honest.
So this campaign is to give up pop. Are you saying to give it up altogether or just have it in moderation?
Moderation is okay. I mean, it's a bit of a tongue-in-cheek. We're trying to use the same sort of style as the sugary drinks companies do, so the whole terminology. So it's supposed to be a bit of fun as well as the serious messages and awareness. Ideally, we'd like people to switch to water or low-fat milk. But, I mean, one step in the right direction is certainly to go to a diet alternative. The odd one, like anything else, is okay. But the problem, of course, is if you develop a sweet tooth, it's difficult to lay off it.
Do you think it's a bad problem in Merseyside or is it across the whole of the UK?
The campaign we're launching is across the Northwest. The problems we have, of course, are UK-wide, but we do have worse health statistics in the Northwest, and Liverpool and Manchester particularly always seem to end up sort of near the top of the tables you don't want to be at. So whether we're talking about tooth decay, we also do see a beginning to have a problem with people on lower income and obesity, which is concerning because that obviously leads to increased health inequalities. I don't know when we sort of got into this sugary drinks addiction, if I can call it that. I mean, it's obviously been taking over our culture and we're used to it. The interesting thing now, of course, is you can't get, well, you shouldn't be able to get, at least unless it's other kids bringing in, you can't get sugary drinks at schools now. So children are gradually learning a lesson. Perhaps they need to tell their mums and dads the same lesson.
We also went out onto the streets of Liverpool to see what people think about fizzy drinks.
I'd limit the amount of fizzy drinks she has.
Yeah.
Well, not introduce them to them in the first place, I guess. And sort of just saying, well, you can have it as a treat. That's probably about it, really, isn't it?
Now and again, yeah. No, I'd say it needs to be just balanced.
Yeah.
So as long as they make like, your right choices, if they're not having it all the time, it's an odd treat, then I think that's fine. Yeah. I think it's anything in moderation.
As long as at the moment, that's us. Maybe she's a treat when she's a bit older, kind of
yeah.
thing. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I don't like the sugar ones. They're just like they leave a horrible taste on your mouth, and on your teeth, kind of thing. You can feel your teeth rotting, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Gulp is using social media to spread the message and encouraging the public to give up loving pop. Private parking companies are being allowed to keep some of the money they raise from parking fines in dozens of NHS hospitals across the UK. The investigation also found the total number of parking tickets issued to motorists in the UK has increased fivefold in the past 5 years. This is despite the Department of Health stating there should be no incentives for private firms to fine people who stay in hospital car parks. Our reporter, Johnny Coop, joins me in the studio now. How are some of the NHS hospitals breaching guidelines?
In a report led by Channel 4's dispatches, they have uncovered that some hospitals are allowing private parking companies to keep a slice of the money they raise from penalty tickets they issue to patients and relatives.
So how did they get this information?
They used the Freedom of Information legislation to establish that 55 of the 156 health trusts in England and Wales are paying some or all of their revenue from parking tickets to contractors.
Didn't the Health Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, pledge to crack down on hospital parking charges?
Yes, back in August, Mr Hunt said hospitals should operate a pay-on-exit parking regimes rather than a pay-on-display for a fixed time period, and they should waive fines if visitors or patients overstay through no fault of their own. The Department of Health also stated there should be no incentive for private firms to fine people who stay in hospital car parks.
Have the Department for Health made any comment?
Yes, they said that they were disappointed to hear that some trusts are not following the hospital parking guidelines, but recognised contractors should receive income to cover the normal costs of providing parking services. But it is stressed that charges must be applied reasonably.
Is this part of a wider problem for the motorist?
Yeah, very much so. 5 years ago, 500,000 tickets were posted to motorists for parking on private land. But by 2014, this has risen to 2.5 million, and with more than £100 million in penalties being demanded from motorists.
Why are these dramatic figures on the rise?
There is now a huge financial incentive for the private companies to fine motorists, but now private companies have introduced vehicle recognition cameras, which monitors motorist compliance with parking rules without even needing the need for wardens.
That was our reporter, Johnny Coop.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, follow us on Twitter at JMU Journalism and come back often.
Liverpool's bombed-out church is set to begin a £150,000 project to preserve the building. The work is due to be carried out in three phases, with the first involving repairs to stonework on the higher levels of the building. Future phases will include restoration work on the tower, low-level stonework and the boundary railings to the garden. Work on the first phase is expected to start this spring and to be completed by the end of the year. It's intended the cost will be funded through an English Heritage Grant and the City Council's Building at Risk budget. Cabinet members will be asked to approve acceptance of the grant at its meeting this coming Friday, the 20th of February. Our reporter, Camelia Nurani, spoke to Ambrose Reynolds, the curator of St Luke's Church, and he says the project means a lot to Liverpool.
It's an icon of Liverpool's ability to survive. The council bought this church in 1968 to build a ring road through it. So they bought it to demolish it. initially, and lots of people objected to that idea, so they shelved the idea, and then it sat idle till around about 2006, when my old group took it over and we started doing shows within it and doing exhibitions. The group I was in, Urban Strawberry Lunch, split up in April last year, around about the same time that Joe Anderson announced that he was going to sell it to be a hotel. 28,000 people signed a petition to say, no, you can't do that. And we have continued to work within the space. It's open 5 days a week, and we have lots of different activities that go on here. Now, English Heritage have this thing, Buildings at Risk Register, and St. Luke's has been on that for a very, very long time. And as far as I know, English Heritage were trying to get in touch with the council, but not getting very far with it for a long, long time. We got in touch with English Heritage and set up a meeting between them and the city council. We took them on a tour of the building, which we know very well because we work in here every day. We took them to all the dangerous bits and said, this needs fixing, that needs fixing, this part needs fixing. And they got together and they've gone 50-50, £75,000 from English Heritage, £75,000 from City Council to do the urgent repairs that need to be done.
Can you describe the current state of the church?
The main part of it, the nave and the chancel part of the church, are in good nick. They've been inspected 3 times this year, and it's been inspected for asbestos. The electrics have been inspected. So it's in good nick on the whole, but it will need some work in the future, like repointing, taking all the weeds that have grown out of where the roof used to be, all that. There's a few loose bricks in different bits that are roped off where the public aren't allowed access to. The work that they're going to do is essential, because if they don't do that very soon, the parts of the wall will fall down, and then we're going to have a massive, massive bill to fix it. So it's stuff that really, really needs to be done. Otherwise, it's going to fall down, and if it falls down, it's going to be a lot more expensive to fix. Still going to have its charm and integrity as what they call a managed ruin.
A survey carried out last year estimated a £500,000 cost was needed to make St. Luke safe. How will this be funded?
Presently, we're setting up a conservation trust that's primarily to maintain the building and raise funds for it. At the same time that me and the other volunteers that run it are setting up a CIC, a community interest company, that will be asset locked into the conservation trust. So any profit that the CIC make goes into a fund to help to repair the building. We'll do some fundraising, we'll try English Heritage Lottery, and there's various private donors that we've got interested in helping to do it. One idea that we've got is to train young people who are presently unemployed in heritage skills under the guidance of old-timers that know what they're doing, that have got a lifetime of experience and are on the verge of retirement, so they can pass their skills along to young trainees, which will keep the costs down, but it will also give a benefit to the young people, giving them skills that they can use later in life.
And how excited are you about the project to preserve St. Luke's?
It's kind of when you've been waiting for a bus for a long time at the bus stop, and then eventually 3 buses come at once. It's that kind of feeling. It's like, thank goodness. It's more than excitement, it's relief. Finally, something's being done. So, I mean, like I say, since 2007, we've been fixing what we're allowed to, but we're not allowed to do the big stuff. We couldn't afford to do the big stuff. So it's like the bus has finally arrived.
That was our reporter, Camelia Nurani, speaking to the curator of Liverpool's bombed-out church, Ambrose Reynolds, about the £150,000 project to preserve the building.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, bookmark jmu-journalism.org.uk.
Now let's find out the latest sport news from our reporter, Hannah Kane.
Football fans have overwhelmingly backed the right to stand to watch top football games, according to the Welsh Conservatives. 96% of Welsh fans surveyed say that they back a trial for safe standing areas at matches. All-seater stadiums have been compulsory in the Premier League and the Championship since the inquiry into the Hillsborough disaster. Welsh Tory leader Andrew Davies says that football fans have the right to be treated the same as any other fans of other sports. I went into the city centre to see what the people of Liverpool thought about having having safe standing areas at matches.
No, because I was there like a Hillsborough, so no. No, why risk it when like we have nice stadiums and stuff now with like there's no chance of like pitch invasions and things like that, you know? So it only seems to be happening at the lower levels, so no, definitely not. Like
full fans, so I would like to see the cops standing again, but for safety reasons, I don't think it will happen.
Wouldn't have happened without that, would it?
Or whether standing was the issue, but if it relates to numbers of people and the stadium too crowded, then I would agree.
Yeah, as a football fan, it'd be nice to stand and be able to engage with other fans and celebrate, you know, a goal, a victory. It's debatable, really.
From a safety perspective, no, because like we're Hillsborough, you wouldn't want to go to a match and not come home.
Yeah, just because times change, people change.
I still think they should be allowed to stand. I shouldn't have to stand and back myself. I know it's a bad thing to say about Hillsborough and all that, but I think you can do it safely.
I think it's a bad idea because of Hillsborough. It was all standing in Hillsborough, and look what happened in Hillsborough. If they would have been seating, would we have avoided the 96 deaths?
All-seater stadiums were one of the key recommendations of the Taylor report into the Hillsborough disaster, where 96 Liverpool fans were killed. England manager Roy Hodgson made the draw for the FA Cup 6 round at Deepdale. Hodgson was helped by Brian Finner, the son of Preston North End legend Sir Tommy Finney. In the FA Cup, Liverpool came from behind to beat Crystal Palace 2-1 on the weekend to send them into the quarterfinals of the FA Cup draw. Adam Lallana and Daniel Sturridge got themselves on the score sheet to ensure Liverpool's win. Manchester United beat Preston 3-1 in the 5th round of the FA Cup at Deepdale. It's the first time the teams had shared a pitch for 43 years. Preston boss Simon Grayson had to make 2 changes to his side, with goalkeeper Sam Johnstone and midfielder Daniel Johnson cup-tied. The FA Cup 6th round will see Bradford take on Reading at home at 12:45 and Aston Villa take on West Brom at 5 p.m. on Saturday the 7th of March. Liverpool take on Bradford on Sunday the 8th of March with a 4 o'clock kickoff, and Manchester United will play Arsenal at 7:45 on Monday the 9th of March. In other Liverpool news, Colo Touré has announced his retirement from international football. The player was recently a part of Ivory Coast's win in the African Cup of Nations. Touré revealed his retirement in December and has now confirmed he has played his last game for Les Elephants, having amassed over 100 caps for his country. Liverpool and Everton play in the Europa League on Thursday the 19th of February. Liverpool take on Turkish side Beşiktaş, returning to the stadium where they won the Champions League in 2005. The draw was conducted by Jerzy Dudek, Liverpool's goalkeeper, in the famous Istanbul encounter with AC Milan and the UEFA ambassador for this season's final in Warsaw. Everton will head to Bern in Switzerland to take on the Young Boys, while Tottenham face Fiorentina in the last 32. England take on New Zealand this Friday on the 20th of February in the Cricket World Cup. Australia won the last game by 101 runs.
Now let's find out what's on a Liverpool this week. The Old Dock Experience is running until the 26th of February, in which you can take a tour of Liverpool's historic Old Dock. Discover how the dock was key to Liverpool's development and see the bed of the pool, the creek that gave Liverpool its name, under the streets of Liverpool One. Tours are free, but booking is essential, so if you'd like to take part, please ring 0151 478 4499. Wednesday 18th of February and Thursday the 19th, display of Tales of Titanic Objects will be on at the Maritime Museum. This is part of a series of Titanic events and is not to be missed. And finally, Chinese New Year 2015 will be celebrated this weekend, hosted in the heart of the city in Chinatown. Huge crowds will be expected to enjoy festivities in the community on Sunday, February the 22nd. Celebrations begin at 11 a.m. That's all from this week's Liverpool Lives podcast. A special thank you to this week's editor, Sinead Monroe. I'm Eleanor Finn, and thank you for listening.
This has been the Liverpool Life, Liverpool Lives podcast. Brought to you by the journalism students at the Redmond's News Centre. More next week.